Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. ComFest, the celebration of community, returns to Goodale Park this weekend after pandemic-forced virtual events in 2020 and 2021. This year is special, marking the 50th anniversary of ComFest and its message of community. This hour, we're talking about the past, the present, and the future of ComFest. Community activist and organizer Mimi Morris attended the first ComFest in 1972 and now is instrumental in writing the program guide. Mimi Morris, welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Ann. Thank you for having me.
So the first year, 1972, you just went as a guest. You just went as a...
No, okay. I actually did work at the festival. I don't know exactly what I did, but I'm going to assume that I did what I did every other festival in the 70s, which is work a shift on what was then called security. But the main thing is that I was there almost against my will. I had been one of six members of Community Union who published an open letter saying that holding this two-day party was a distraction from the important work of anti-war organizing. The U.S. had just mined Haiphong Harbor, and fever was running really high. But, you know, we lost that vote, and I'm really glad we did. But so I was there, but I was distracted because, to almost no one's surprise, the night before the festival, the police had done a sweep of local activists, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out who was in jail, including which of our lawyers was in jail, who was in jail, what was their bail, and how in God's name were we going to get them out of there. But I really enjoyed the rest of the festival, and so did a lot of other people, so we just kept on doing it.
What was it like, that first one?
Extremely mellow, and that's something that we have worked hard to maintain over the years. It's just... people have actually described, and I totally understand that when you walk onto the site, it's like coming home, and something inside you relaxes and said, oh, right, this is how it's supposed to be. And that's what we want to do, is create pretty much a full surround, immersive idea of what an alternative world could feel like.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is the 50th anniversary of ComFest, and it returns to live stages, live venue at Goodale Park for its 50th anniversary this weekend. My guest is Mimi Morris. She's a community activist and organizer. She was at the first ComFest and has been involved in all aspects of the festival, including writing the program guide. If you have a question, or actually what I'd really love to do is hear from listeners who have memories of ComFest, special memories, because there's a lot to remember about it, and we only have an hour. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, with your memories. We'd love to hear them. I remember my first one was in 1989. It was in the Short North parking lot. You called it the Dust Bowl, Mimi?
Yes. that's where Victorian Gate now stands.
Yep.
Yes, and there was nothing growing on that lot, nothing.
It was a dust bowl.
Right. We took the rocks out before we had the festival, but that left a lot of bare dirt.
Over the years, how many times has ComFest moved?
Only twice, once to the dust bowl and once across the street into the park.
Because before that, tell us, it was in that triangle area.
It was on a traffic triangle where three streets meet on 16th Avenue, which is now Willie Phoenix Way, and rightly so. We had one stage, and it sat on this little triangle of land, and the audience sat on the lawn of the Wesley Foundation, which was okay with them, thanks to all three of the religious leaders we were at the Wesley Foundation, across the street was United Christian Center, and down the way was Hillel.
Right.
And they were instrumental in helping to get the permits for the first festival. But it was a small shindig.
You said you were kind of on the security detail?
I'm sure I worked a security shift. There wasn't much to do.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you.
I mean, we had to talk down some rude fraternity boys who lived on the corner, and that was about it. There was not a lot. Like I said, it was almost impossibly mellow.
Columbus was a bastion of conservatism back then. I mean, I suppose some people might argue that because of the State House and the makeup of the State House, it still is. But by and large, the city's become much more liberal, much more progressive over the last 50 years. What was it like back in 72?
Let's put it this way. Somebody shot at me through my front window for working on the Columbus Free Press. So it was not a hospitable atmosphere. But, I mean, that's not what any of this was really about. This was about a different kind of inhospitable, the kind that doesn't fund city services and doesn't, you know, provide avenues of redress. And so we had to go out and build all these things ourselves. So, yeah, it was really politically conservative.
Back in the day. How did you get the word out then? Because you're right, you don't do corporate sponsorships,
right,
and you've stuck to that for 50 years.
Yeah.
Everyone else has fallen by the wayside on that score.
Yes,
you must have gotten some pressure along the way, right? Because it became so big.
Yes, just for example, there are companies that have wanted to advertise in the program guide, and we've said no thank you because we wanted to try to, we do have some large advertisers, but we've been trying for several years to try to keep it local. And, you know, there's, telling them thanks but no thanks has been an interesting process over the years. It's like, I'm glad you're interested, but we're not doing that.
I mean, you don't really even like to necessarily publicize like a lot of organizations would.
This is true.
I've tried to get you guys on before. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I spent several years where the media job, it consisted almost entirely of calling up organizations and saying, would you please forget you ever heard of us? Because by word of mouth, the festival was growing so fast that we could barely manage it. And it was just, it didn't need any more publicity. Right now, we're in a different position coming off 2 years of the pandemic. We did have virtual festivals both years, but we really need to get the word out that we're back in Goodale Park. And yes, we need you to come sign up for a volunteer shift. And I'm not looking at you because I know that you do. But everybody else, yes, we really do need you to give a shift.
Give a shift, share a shift. You can go to what? How can people
go to comfest.com and follow what you see. There's a big thing on the front page tells you where to go. And there's a whole lot of different jobs, from working backstage to being a bartender to being a museum docent to handing out program guides to helping maintain the mellow as part of the safety patrol, you know, all kinds of things.
I think couple years I would just pick up trash.
Yes.
I really like doing that because you got to wander around the park.
That's right. You get to see the whole park. That's a great job.
Yeah.
And there was a really well-run operation staffed by really good people. So, yes, recycling, cleanup.
Yeah, there's lots of fun things to do. Seven stages this year?
No,
okay.
Not anymore.
Okay.
We downsized, partly to get people out of the sun on the cap there. But we've downsized and rearranged the stations. I believe there's effectively five stages this year if you count the Peace and Healing Pavilion.
And your themes to each station.
Say this again, please.
Themes to each station?
No.
Okay. They're just, how do you rank them then?
We rank them? Rank them? No, we don't rank them.
Okay.
In fact,
one's a really big stage, though.
If you really want to annoy a Comfest organizer, try referring to the Bozo stage as the main stage. It's not the main stage. They're all the main stage.
Okay.
Anyhow, in fact, one of the things that's going on this year is we've really mixed up the music. So there's all different kinds of music on every stage. And as opposed to having themes. Like people are going, where's the jazz stage? It's everywhere.
Okay. Just walk around.
Yeah.
You want people to walk around and explore.
Well, I was going to say, you can look at the schedule in the program guide, which is currently in some libraries and shops and will be available on site. Or you can just do it the ConFest way, which is serendipity. Just walk in and wander around and see what happens.
That's kind of how I do it. Again, callers 614-292-8513. We want your ComFest memories. ComFest is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. It goes live again at Goodale Park this weekend. 614-292-8513. We'll have a link to ComFest so you can learn more about what's going on there and also how to volunteer. They are in dire need of volunteers. They need your help. You can go to WOSU.org/allsides for that. When ComFest was at the traffic triangle in the University District for a while, and then it moved to the parking lot, the gravel parking lot where Victorian
Gate is now
in Short North.
And that was 1983, I believe.
Yeah. And then when did it really take off when it went to Goodale? Because I can't remember.
Not right away.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what the years of biggest growth were around 2010. Starting around 2009, and it was blinding, and it's settled down a bit now. We'll see what it's like this year. I mean, I think I've always thought, obviously, or I wouldn't still be doing this, that there's a huge appetite for what we're doing here, and it's just a matter of making sure people know what's happening.
What do you attribute that to, the appetite for what you're doing?
Standard issue living conditions in the United States in 2022 are not so wonderful for most people. And what we are about is celebrating all of the alternatives and all the prospects there are for a different world. And it's a lot.
So that's still, the issues are still there.
Yeah, except people don't, when they come to ComFest, we do have all kinds of material about the issues, but it's not just an intellectual process of here's something I agree with, there's another thing I agree with. It's also that you put it all together, leave it on the back burner for 50 years, and it's magic. It's the atmosphere that all of that together creates, all of these people trying so many different ways to make the world a better place.
I'm going to grab a comment from Del in Clintonville. Hi, Del, you're on the air. We're getting ready to take a break.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I've had booths at ComFest off and on since the early 90s. I had homemade jewelry booth back in the 90s, which was probably my favorite way to have a booth because you could really sit back and enjoy the view and the people. But the food booth was some of the hardest work I've ever done, but some of the most rewarding because we were one of the few all vegan food booths that you could have at ComFest, and I really loved it. I love ComFest and everything about it.
Well, we loved your booth.
Thank you,
Del. Thanks a lot for that call. Appreciate it. We will take a break. My guest is Mimi Morris. She's a community activist and organizer. She was at the first ComFest in 1972. She's been involved all along the way ever since. ComFest is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. It returns live to Goodale Park this weekend. We'd like to hear your memories of ComFest over the years. There must be a ton of them out there after 50 years. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. ComFest, the celebration of community, returns to Goodale Park this weekend after the pandemic forced virtual events in 2020 and 2021. This year is special. It marks the 50th anniversary of ComFest and its message of community. This hour, we're talking about the past, present, and future of ComFest. Still with us is community activist Mimi Morris, who was at the first ComFest in 1972 and is now instrumental in writing the program guide, the all-important program guide. Michael Gruber is a longtime ComFest organizer and political activist. He helps produce the ComFest program guide and coordinates safety measures for the festival. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
And Daryl Mendelson heads up the Entertainment Committee, which is responsible for the music and workshops on all the ComFest stages. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Daryl, there are fewer stages this year. What went into the thinking on that?
Well, the cost has risen. So it's become more and more expensive to put on ComFest, and we needed to cut expenses somewhat, and we weren't getting quite enough volunteers, so we thought that might help to cut down the amount of stages.
I don't mind, because I always had this fear of missing out on everything at ComFest. Like, you want to be running around like a banshee trying to, you know, check out each little thing, and you know, you can't. So it might make it a little easier for crazy people like me.
Yeah, not for me, though. I mean, we have so many good bands and good performers in Columbus. We normally get close to 500 applications, and a very high percentage of them deserve to play at ComFest. So it just has made it harder to, you know, be able to schedule.
When did the music part of it? I know it's always been an element. There was a stage at the very first ComFest in 1972, but when did it take off? When the venues started to expand, or what?
Well, yes, I remember 72. 73, we actually had a couple of really important national acts play. We had Ross on Roland Kirk play, and we had Sleepy John Estes with his famous band Yank Rachel, and Hammy Nixon. But we had a period starting in the late 80s where we brought in some national acts because we wanted to increase attendance. So we had a string. We had Country Joe and the Fish, and New Riders of the Purple Sage, Commander Cody, Kinsey Report, and NRBQ. But when we stopped having national acts, we started getting bigger. I mean, just on the local bands. And when we moved into, well, even when we moved into Goodale Park itself, we had some problems because the new stage was so far from the beer, because we couldn't have beer right in the park. Right. So it ended up that a few ComFest organizers, the people that ran the beer, they decided to put a stage in the beer tent.
Okay.
So, and we had also had expanded at the same time we expanded. We figured the gazebo was there. We might as well use a gazebo, you know. And we had the stage that the Bozo stage was a stage that was built for years. It was incredible production. It took a really long time. And the people that put it together were called the Bozos. So we had set that up by the shelter house on the south side of the shelter house. So over the years, things we started getting more and more people. And then for a period, it got so large, we were discussing how do we make it smaller. You know, we were getting too many people, and also we felt it was impacting the neighborhood, you know, and we also felt a lot of people at the time were just there for the party, and we wanted to get our message across that, what, you know, how ComFest started and what our main concern was. And about 14 years ago, I think we created a Spirit and Purpose Committee and started to have more workshops and stuff and let people see what our purpose was, is.
Still, after all these years, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Daryl Mendelson. He heads up the Entertainment Committee for ComFest. That means he's responsible for the music and the workshops on all the ComFest stages. He's been a key figure in the Columbus music scene for decades and performs with the Mendelsonics. Also with us, Mimi Morris. She's community activist and organizer. She was at the first ComFest. And Michael Gruber, longtime ComFest organizer and political activist. He helps produce the ComFest program guide and coordinates safety during ComFest. What's that like these days when you're looking at upwards of 50,000 people?
Well, it's always been a challenge to get enough volunteers, especially at the the later hours, the 8 to midnight shift.
Do you have volunteers for that, too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I was there till midnight last night.
Just watching the place and making sure everything was okay, because things are pretty much set up, right? Yeah.
But, yeah, there's been challenges through the years. We get a lot of community organizations that provide volunteers, but that's gotten more difficult through the years as well. I mean, our roots are coming from community organizations forming the festival and wanting to keep that spirit and purpose going, that the activist community in Columbus is vibrant, like organizations to be able to get their message out during ComFest, and safety, we try and do our best to maintain the mellow, as Mimi has said. You know, we sometimes have to deal with people that maybe don't agree with our political stripe, but we try and keep people respectful and, let their voices be heard, but, not create a disturbance.
How has the polarization of the country in general, have you seen that play out at ComFest?
Well, as Mimi said, when people arrive at ComFest, it's a different environment. It's different from other festivals in Columbus. We don't have, all the corporate signs everywhere. I think that helps keep the crowd more interested in looking at each other and seeing people that they only see during the 3 days of ComFest and wonder where they are the rest of the year.
Yeah, people watching is the best. Peggy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you for calling. You first went to ComFest in 1982?
I think it was 1982. It was 81 or 82, and I didn't even live here. I was invited by my sister. She was like, come to this festival. It's really cool. She was going to school at OSU, and there was going to be a band there that I really love. For any old-timers that are listening, I came to see Ronald Cole and the Trillionaires.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Ronald Cole and the Trillionaires were playing at that particular festival. And I didn't move here until the 90s.
Uh-huh.
At that point, of course, it had moved over to Goodale. But I started volunteering immediately. So I've been either volunteering or having my own booth ever since I moved to Columbus.
What do you think about how it's changed? Yeah.
I think, growth was inevitable. It's a growing city. But to me, the thing that's always been at the heart of it is what attracts me to it, and I think your guest just pointed that out, it's not like other festivals. It's a completely volunteer-run, non-corporate-labeled endeavor, a cooperative endeavor of the whole community. And I think that's the draw. I'm absolutely on the roster to volunteer all weekend. I start Friday night and I'll be there all 3 days.
Thank you very much.
Peggy, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I mean, a lot of people just think that ComFest sort of pops up out of the ground for those 3 days.
Like a Shangri-La.
Yeah, we have a dedicated core of people that have worked on the festival for many years that work year-round to, fine-tune and decide how to do the next festival.
How do you pass on the organization of it?
It's difficult because when we started out, we had card tables and, it was a small block party type of event. And we grew into it over 50 years.
Right.
And, you know, when some younger people come in, you know, they're saying, well, we'll commit for a few years, and, you know, then they go off with other endeavors. It's hard to find people to step up when they're stepping up at, when it's as big as it is.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How do you get feedback from visitors, Mimi? How do you know how people are responding to what you're doing from year to year?
Well, in the first place, the grapevine absolutely works. And that was before.
You don't have to ask.
Yeah, right. We don't have to ask. That was before social media was invented. We get plenty of feedback. During the festival, people go to the information station to talk to us. That works good, too.
And someone keeps track of that? Sort of.
If it's, right, if it's exceptional.
We have two meetings after the festival where we sort of self-critique and say, what went right? What can we do better? You know, there's always room for improvement. And, you know, people will make suggestions during the festival, like Mimi said. One was a woman said, well, why don't you put the kids' schedule next to the kids' page in the program? And so we did.
Good idea.
But the main way that, you know, this is a good time to mention that all meetings of the General Planning Committee are open, and they're didn't publish them in the program guide this year because there were major uncertainties at the last moment, but there will be a schedule on the website. And in addition to those two follow-up meetings, you could just come to a meeting.
And you just start getting involved that way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, many people who are involved today, you know, just myself, I happened on ComFest the second year. Didn't even know it was happening. I went down to campus to buy records. And, you know, I was involved with organizations and worked at booths and did safety for one shift. And, you know, now I'm doing it the whole festival.
Do you know if there's anything like ComFest anywhere else in the country?
Not that I know of.
The closest I've ever seen, there was something called the People's Fest in Denver, but they shifted toward corporate sponsorship more than 20 years ago. And also, one of the consequences of that, I was in Denver for a journalism convention and stumbled onto this thing, but they had agreed to separate out their social movements into a separate neighborhood of the grounds. And I'm going, what was that? You know, they took it away from all the craftspeople and the food booths and stuff like that. That's nuts. I mean, you know, we're all part of one fabric.
Yeah, funny thing, we'll get comments from people saying, I hear the ComFest is moving fairgrounds or, you know, name any place. And, you know, it's always amazing how many people are chattering about ComFest during the year.
Exactly. Anticipating it this year. Let's see. Lisa in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lisa.
Hi there. I just wanted to say thank you to these three for all their hard work. I attended back in the late 90s. My brother lived at Wilbur and Neil, and I'd park there and we'd walk over. I never thought I was hip enough because I was already out of OSU school and got my teaching job. And, you know, we'd walk over and just have a ball. I'd buy jewelry every year. And I have to say the welcoming business is the biggest because I've been – my brother then moved to Chicago, and how many festivals did I go to in that big park? And you just feel like an attendee, you know, moving with the throng. And the ComFest was just right up our alley with political views, but also just low-key and fun. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Lisa, for that call. I appreciate it. Do you have any idea, any of you, how many suburbanites venture?
I'd say quite a few, actually. I mean, people from Dublin and Hilliard and other communities. You know, looking at the volunteer base, I mean, people come from all over the Central Ohio community.
Mm-hmm.
And some people come back from out of town to be here for the 3 days and to volunteer.
And then the diversity of the crowd, better every year? Or?
Yeah, I'd say that Daryl could speak to that with making efforts to have a diverse representation in the entertainment.
Right.
Yeah, I believe it's gotten more diverse on the stages and in the audience.
Yeah, it's a goal.
Yes. We also, you know, we have a sister festival, the Hot Times Festival,
right,
which is always the weekend after Labor Day. And, we work together to help get acts that from other neighborhoods and work those in. It's something also to get back to what makes ComFest different. Besides us not taking corporate sponsorship, you know, most festivals, when they get larger, they start bringing in national acts.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use that. We haven't used national acts for years. The only time we'll bring in a national act is if we think it's something very political that has a political message.
Why did you stop bringing in national acts as a rule?
Well, we didn't think it was necessary, and it worked. It started, the growth was accelerating after we stopped, and I don't think that's completely why we stopped, but, there were just so many good bands, and we thought that was enough to draw people in. And, I don't think any festival in Columbus has featured so much local talent, and it's not just the entertainment. Our street fair is the best street fair craft festival local in Columbus. You know, the arts festival started off, they were, similar to ComFest when they started, when
right,
at the State House. It had like a hippie feel to it. But now most of the crafts people are from out of town, so it's nice to show off what's happening all over the country. But, ComFest, if you want to see the best in local talent, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, the street fair committee, it's a juried process to get into the street fair. And, they really try to have a, diverse representation there and not have just, a lot of OSU-type stuff. But, I mean, there's some,
yeah,
but, try and have a good balance of both community organizations, local artisans, and, some of these people really going to want you to visit their booths this year because they depended on a lot of income from the days of ComFest. So come on down and spend some dollars with our local artisans.
We'll be right back. We're talking about ComFest. It's returning to Goodale Park this weekend to celebrate its 50th anniversary. We'd love to hear your memories of ComFest. There's plenty of them out there. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. ComFest, the celebration of community, returns to Goodale Park this weekend after the pandemic forced it into virtual events last year and the year before. This year is special. It marks the 50th anniversary of ComFest and its message of community. This hour, we're talking about the past, the present, and the future of ComFest. Still with us are ComFest organizers Mimi Morris, Michael Gruber, and Daryl Mendelson. He's the one that's the head of the entertainment committee. If you have any memories of ComFest you want to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's the message of community, and then there's also the giving back to the community that has taken on a greater importance over the years.
Yeah, serving on the grants committee is sort of an honor among our organizers. where we get to review submissions that people send in, and they're not huge grants, because we're trying to help fund new projects from local organizations that are doing good in the community. And, ComFest has given hundreds of thousands of dollars out in grants. We've supported Good Ale Park in many ways. We collect funds for the homeless. ComFest, the big part is that giving back to the community.
You didn't always, it got to a point where you had extra funds to share with the community, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to take Lance in Columbus. Hi, Lance. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been going to ComFest pretty much since the beginning, and I remember that the first one, there were no hired police, that it was all volunteer safety people, and that the night before that festival and that morning of the first day of the festival, a bunch of anti-war activists got arrested, including some ComFest people. What I'd like to ask the group is, so over the years, how has ComFest come to terms with the fact that tension with police has kind of ebbed and flowed? How have they gone about working out that relationship and making sure that when people come to ComFest, they don't feel threatened by the police?
Well, I'll hand that over to Michael Gruber, who's the who helps produce the ComFest and coordinate safety.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The early days, there was that tension, when people were in the streets and getting hit over the head and thrown in jail, didn't exactly breed kumbaya moments. Through the years, the police became more like our age group, and we're much more simpatico with our feelings. We worked with the police officers for equal rights, and they would provide our special duty officers, and we would have meetings with them, share our observations, what they're hearing in the community. And we've got a good working relationship. They're not there to be heavies. I'm speaking of the Columbus police. There are other state agencies that come in, looking for underage people. With safety, we've tried to do a good job of, talking to younger people and explain, what people are looking for. But the caller is absolutely right. It's been an evolution through the years. And I would say today we have a good working relationship.
Did any of you mentioned, Mimi, that first year that Peter just referenced, or the caller just referenced, as when they were arresting anti-war protesters the day before the conflict? You said you were still kind of trying to deal with that the night before the first one.
Actually, there was a demonstration on Thursday, May 11th, which was the day before the festival started. And that night, there was a sweep of police going to the homes of what turned out to be a targeted list of people they considered leaders of the anti-war movement. And they got some things hilariously wrong, arresting, in one case, the wrong guy because he looked like the person they wanted. But there was nothing funny about what they did with the people they arrested. They locked them all up. When the lawyers went down to try to arrange bail, they locked up the lawyers.
Good old days.
Pardon me?
The good old days, huh?
Yeah. I should say, I have to pause here, by the way. Yeah, in a way, but none of this was fun. It was really, I can't think of the word but it was odd to be going through this trauma in the middle of the first community festival. It wasn't ComFest yet, which was wonderful. The community festival was just really mellow and full of artistic expression, but there was this undercurrent where some of us were just running around going, oh my God, what just happened? And it wasn't through happening. It went on for another week. There was another sweep of arrest. Eventually 122 people were arrested. So it was weird. But the festival went on, and I'm glad it did.
50 years strong. Let's see. Peter in Seattle, you're on the air. Hi, Peter.
Hey, actually, I'm in Columbus now because I've returned to Seattle. I mean, returned to Columbus for the 28th year in a row to come back to ComFest.
Here, here.
Wow.
Yeah, I used to run the Third Avenue Church. We always had a booth and sold fudge brownies and ice cream. But when I moved away in 95, I haven't missed one since. And I just love to hear the old-time performers that are always back, like Megan Palmer and Donna McGavro, or even international acts like Tony Monaco, who makes an effort to close the festival every year. I usually get in about 14 dance sets and cool off with some iced tea from Dr. Pete Howison's booth and make sure I make some spin art over at Sarah's joint.
Absolutely, and spin art.
And I enjoy sometimes taking a break from safety duties to, you know, dance with you in front of the Bozo stage.
So. Exactly, exactly. And what's so great is the intergeneration of it now. My goddaughter, Liza Marlowe, is just a key person for set up and tear down. Well, I can remember her in arms back in the mid 80s as a baby, and now she's one of the bosses. So it's a tradition of, you know, made up of a lot of us that were active in the 70s, but now there's a lot of us in the younger generation who are embracing the activism of the new millennium. So I'm very excited to be back and look forward to seeing everybody this weekend.
Welcome back, Peter.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Wait, you're talking about Liza Marlowe, one of our honored ComFest volunteers this year?
Which you can read about in the program guide.
The very one. Yeah, exactly. There's a whole page about her in the program guide.
All right. Well, everybody can read all about her. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. The music is a really, really big deal to a lot of people. And how do you decide when and where people are going to play at ComFest?
Well, for one thing, that that we probably do differently than a lot of festivals is we look at the volunteerism. We give extra consideration if you volunteered, extra consideration if you're active in the community. So that's a big part of it. And then, you know, we're just trying to figure out the best combinations to mix things up. You know, things changing a little bit this year. But I want to use this opportunity to bring up the role of women in ComFest that women have played you know, back in the early 70s and early years, especially in 1975, it was the same situation with women in music as in sports. It wasn't something that women did, so most of the entertainment was men. And, you know, in some ways, maybe a lot of the women weren't as proficient yet because they weren't given the opportunity, you know, weren't encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1975 and a few other festivals, we had gave a whole day of women performers on the stage that men weren't allowed to perform and not even work on the stage. And 75 was the most famous one because we also brought in Holly Nia to perform.
Wow.
And besides entertainment, women have played an immense role in ComFest. You know, one of our main founders was Libby Gregory, who later founded Tradewinds in Byzantium, Fifth Avenue Coffee Shop. Sue Erbis played a huge role. And now we have Mimi and Candy Watkins. We couldn't have a festival without Candy. Connie Everett has played a huge role in ComFest. So it's been a really big part of it, and we try and keep that going on. You know, workshops, we like to have a lot of workshops that deal with women's issues, and you know, we're very proud of that side of our diversity.
Jerry in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Good.
So I was involved planning the first festival, but didn't get to attend. I was one of those anti-war demonstrators who didn't want to find myself too visible in public that weekend.
So, is this Jerry F.?
It is.
Yeah, okay. I thought so. Anyways, yeah, go on.
So you know, my perspective on this really came from the organizations. This was actually a unified effort, as was said earlier, that the religious institutions were the landowners, so they had to sign off on the block party permit. But the energy was from a group called Community Union, which was a coalition or a collaboration between the food co-op, the Columbus Tenants Union, the daycare co-op, Open Door Clinic. The Free Press was at the table. So that group was seeing this as an opportunity for a great party, and enjoys party more than I do. But there also was this underlying spirit. We talked about a party with a purpose. And the purpose really was to educate a wider group of folks, to create a forum for discussion of the ideas that we were looking for. And I think there was a general underpinning of wanting to look at creation of alternative economic institutions that focused on people rather than profit, that, you know, was less concerned about property than they were about people in terms of housing, food, a number of those things. And the university area at that point was, in some respects, much like an urban ghetto, sense that the housing was low quality. Mm-hmm. The food that was available in the supermarkets was not the best. So there was a impetus to try and create some self-sufficiency there. And so I guess my question for the folks there is, you know, how do we use the size, the scope of the current festival to really try to get people engaged, not so much as engaged in the festival, which needs work all year round, but how do we get them engaged in those other activities and begin to think about alternative economic institutions that focus on the principles of the Comfest, cooperation rather than competition?
Yeah, Mimi Morris?
I think you're describing the whole project of Comfest. All we can do is, I mean, we are not a leadership organization in any of these areas. We are a platform and a very large one. But what we can do is provide accessibility for groups that are working on this stuff to come forward. It's possible that in the future the Community Festival organization might decide to convene gatherings at other times of the year. I mean, in the past, we've gotten together community organizations to talk about various things, but and we could do more of that, I suppose, if we had more volunteers.
Daryl Medicine.
Yeah. You know, we one way, you know, through our workshops, we have 3 days of workshops, but we also have every day at each stage, we have at least one speaker mm-hmm. that's talking about the, you know, important issues of our time, you know, voting rights, women's rights, union organizing. We have MCs all the time, 36 different MCs, and they receive literature to, you know, what they're supposed to talk about from the stages. And then the performers themselves, I mean, it's amazing to go through all these applications and see what all these performers do other than just perform. One example would be Jen Miller, who's
Miller.
The head of League of Women Voters.
And was Sierra Club before that.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And Martin and the King Center before that, too. And sometimes through their music, they put out that, you know,
right.
the stuff we're talking about.
I am so glad you all came in today. That's Daryl Mendelson. He has been a key figure in the Columbus music scene for decades, and part of that through his work with the Comfest, which celebrates its 50th anniversary this weekend at Goodale Park. Also, Michael Gruber, another Comfest organizer, and Mimi Morris was at the first Comfest in 1972. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. Everybody else out there, have a happy Comfest. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. NPR News.